This is the Future Focus Terminal Podcast, where we talk about challenges operators face and how experts combine human ingenuity, experience, and innovative tech and deliver unprecedented solutions that lead the way. Welcome back to the Future Focus Terminal Podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Fairchild. In honor of Earth Day, I have not one, not two, but five experts with me to talk about ESG and decarbonization in the freight and transportation space. Welcome, guests.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hi.
I will have you all introduce yourself. I'm going to go ahead and start with our own Con Global expert, Paige.
Hey, thank you, Shauna. As Shauna mentioned, my name is Paige Bartine. I'm our senior environmental compliance specialist. And what that really entails is focusing on compliance such as stormwater, air permitting, GRESB analysis, and I lead our sustainability initiatives as well.
Thank you. Brandon?
Hi. First off, thanks, Shauna, for having me. My name is Brandon Banishak, and I've had the pleasure and opportunity to be with Con Global for 15 years. Been able to experience all facets of our business, from operations to analytics, and most recently now the Director of Safety, Training, and Operational Excellence.
Thank you, Brandon. All right, if I could have Alan introduce himself.
Yeah, hi, Alan White. I head up Emerging Platforms, the Office of the Chief Technology Officer at Siemens. Our first emerging platform is in transportation, specifically transitioning transport to electrification. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Okay, Roland?
Hey, Roland Butsky with Siemens. 20 years with Siemens. Pretty passionate about energy. I've done energy my whole career, even before Siemens. I do everything on the supply side and the demand side and sustainability and decarbonization, of course. I live in Massachusetts, and I do have a net zero home, so I do try to take work home with me. So a pleasure to meet you all, and looking forward to the conversation.
I'll be interested in hearing more about that if it comes up. Thank you for joining us. And Ashley.
Yeah, my name is Ashley Lane. I am Senior Manager of Air and Carbon with BNSF. I have a background in environmental compliance, but more recently, my role is in sustainability initiatives and advanced technology projects.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Paige, why don't you kick us off and set the stage for our listeners? Why are we here today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all know that there's a push to decarbonize across not only our industry, but other industries as well. And the UN is encouraging companies to accelerate their targets to reach net zero by 2050. And the Paris Agreement calls for a 45% decrease in emissions by 2030 in order to reach those 2050 goals. So that might seem daunting, might feel like we have a lot of work to do, but the good news is the coalition is growing. Expert reports indicate that with 3 years of intensive cross-industry collaboration that we can meet these goals and even exceed them. I think that's a huge reason why we're here today, and I'm really personally excited about having Siemens and BNSF here with us to kind of talk about how we can tackle these issues together, because I think collaboration is going to be a huge role in achieving decarbonization in general. And, you know, if you think about it, the world is a shared resource. Water and air don't know boundaries. So remembering that is kind of my key passion in sustainability, and yeah, just remembering that we all share this world and we can all really make a difference and work together and tackle decarbonization.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We cannot do this alone, and it takes great partners like Siemens and like BNSF to do this. And I can't wait to hear more about those collaborations as we talk today. All right, so with that, I'm going to go ahead and start with Roland from Siemens. So how does Siemens help drive the creation and implementation of a decarbonization plan, and how crucial is setting that foundation?
So great question, and it's something, like I said, I'm very passionate about here. So as Siemens is a full service capable company in terms of the journey itself, so when we are working with a client, we can jump in wherever they are, because a lot of organizations are at different places on the journey. The question relative to creation is the assessment aspects of it. So it's alignment, it's understanding what the drivers are, what the goals are, and then coming up with a strategy and a plan associated with those goals specifically, and then obviously the implementation and the KPIs associated with that. So From a driver perspective, from an assessment perspective, it's understanding, is this customer driven, investor driven, leadership driven, regulation, fines and fees, et cetera, incentives and opportunities. It's usually a mix, obviously, but you know, where are the pressures coming from and why, and understanding those, because that's going to help us define the goals. And Paige already indicated, right, that you know the goals are net zero in most cases, and most companies have demarcations relative to time, so 2030 or 2050. A lot of companies are looking at 50% by 2030 and then net zero by 2050. But as technologies improve, we've seen organizations also change their perspective and try to be more aggressive. We, Siemens ourselves, have a net zero goal by 2030 and a net 55% reduction from our baseline by 2025, which is right around the corner. And we're well on our way to do that. So we also bring our experience to our clients as well. So from an assessment standpoint, again, we start there with understanding what the drivers are and understanding what the goals are. And then it's a matter of creating that strategy. And that strategy, we usually look at the levers. And the levers are associated with the, you know, the macros that can contribute to that. For example, electrification, I know Alan will talk a little bit about that, infrastructure improvement, energy efficiency, on-site generation, off-site generation, procurement. There are a lot of levers, and Siemens can help and has expertise in all of those. So we're able to help define what those levers are, also create budgets around cost and time. And also, most organizations, I think, understand now that there is also an opportunity for ROI within some of the context of this. And that might be direct savings, or that might be cost avoidance associated with some of the implications. And so we're also able to help define the budgets from a time standpoint, obviously achieving the goals, and from a cost standpoint, or save and or potential ROI standpoint. And so those are very important factors when we're trying to understand what that investment has to be and when, and we're able to put that together. So those are just the creation aspects of it, is the assessment, the definition of the goals and the strategy. Then it comes down to the implementation. And as I said, Siemens is full service. So we're able to come in at the macro level and help with some of the broader aspects of the implementation, looking at digitalization. I know Alan will talk a little bit about aspects of digitalization, but again, we're a full service provider there in terms of data acquisition, data management, KPIs. So having the right information, having it accessible, and then having it managed and reported out on a, you know, on a regular basis to key stakeholders is obviously a big part of this, and that's what Siemens does. Then from an implementation standpoint, we can actually get into the weeds. We get to the site level, and a lot of work obviously happens at the site level. And each site can be different. Even in an organization that manages, you know, the same type of facility or similar facilities, again, region to region, there might be different challenges, different opportunities. And so we're looking at specifically what's happening at the site level and how do we bring that back to the levers that we talked about from as part of the strategy to ultimately achieve the goals. And we're able to do that. And then that wraps up with that digitalization that I talked about. So that's, you know, again, we have the KPIs, we have the data. How are we reporting on that data? To whom are we reporting it? And then as technology changes and opportunities change, can we modify that plan to accommodate new technologies and new opportunities? So that's an overview of how we participate in that process. And there's obviously a lot of nuances and details to it. And it's a fantastic journey. So.
Yeah, no, that's great. I like how you talk about where you basically meet people where they are. You help them define what success looks like. I think you help them think about it in different ways that they might not have thought about it before. And so not only does it help people, you know, maybe meet goals that they thought that they already had, but I think you help them take it to the next level. And I think that's really fantastic.
Absolutely. One other point about that is sustainability has to be financially, operationally, and environmentally sustainable. It's a three-legged stool, and if we're only doing one aspect of it, then it's not going to be sustainable. And so one of the things that we try to do, and that's why I do it in my home, is because financially and operationally it helps, as well as being the right thing to do for the environment and the future of our planet. So when we work with our clients, we're looking at it from that same perspective, the financial, the operational, and the environmental sustainability.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point there with the financial aspect of it, because, you know, as long as I've been in the transportation space, people, and I came from a railroad as well, like Ashley, but would ask, you know, obviously, you know, railroading, that's the more sustainable way to move things. But, you know, people would ask, you know, are people willing to pay more for that? And, you know, if you look back 5 years and maybe even now, you know, nobody was willing to pay more. And I don't know if they are at this point in time, now that I don't sit in a railroad, but I think that that economic aspect of it is a key point in that stool. So to your point, and how do you help people, you know, come to the ROIs and their sustainability path as well?
Right. I think that's the biggest barrier when you think about sustainability and all the efforts is the cost and the impact, you know, and Siemens does a good job at start to finish, making sure that it's a smooth transition to our ultimate goal of 2050.
All right. So, Alan, I'm going to stick on Siemens here for a minute. What are the right strategies and practical actions that would help companies decarbonize faster?
Well, first and foremost, you have to measure a lot, you know, before you really commit. And so the planning and the planning of the infrastructure is very important. I think for fleets in particular, like ones at ConGlobal and at BNSF, you know, what companies used to do is they would just sell charging stations to say, all right, you're getting an electric fleet, here's some charging stations, throw them over the wall, and there you go, have at it. And I think that fleets these days need far more than that. You know, you can't just have one piece of the infrastructure, because that's the tip of the iceberg. You know, most of these depots and terminals and warehouses or even rail yards, they're not necessarily or historically that energy dense when it comes to the electricity piece. And so what we try to do is plan what's needed, what is the capacity needed, what are the use cases. You know, I as Paige knows, we visited the Stockton yard, the BNSF yard, and we learned a whole lot about, you know, what goes on there operationally as you think about the electric trucks that are kind of bobtailing back and forth between the rail and the truck, and being able to, you know, understand what that use case is, be able to make sure you have the right power capacity, and then be able to make sure that you have the right set of chargers is important. But as importantly now, as Roland referred to, is the data. And, you know, for us, what's important to our service is really three things. Number one, integrating the data not only from the charger, but from the energy side and from the telematics side to make sure it's all coming together. And by doing that integration, we learn quite a bit, you know, causally on the best way to approach energy savings. Because as you're going to start to transition to electrification, there's a significant amount of load that people, you know, generally aren't very aware of in terms of where the cost drivers are. So if you look at all those kilowatt hours that you're now generating as load, and being able, you know, our real, you know, our most important objective we have with our customers is to reduce that per kilowatt hour spend. And so being able to do that by, you know, combination of financing, combination of charging the vehicles at the right time, you know, based on what's happening in the grid, and then being able to participate even in some of these revenues that the grid has on the wholesale side, there's many ways we can work with you on that. And so that's one of the important elements of the journey to success, is really understanding that the biggest mistake customers make is just getting infrastructure, but not understanding how it can work to their benefit. And it can also work to reduce cost, improve the overall efficiency of the fleet, and overall reduce time. And I think the most important area here is reducing risk. Transitioning to electric fleet, there's, you know, uncertainty. And one of the things that our solutions are able to do is to reduce that uncertainty, reduce that risk, in addition to all those other business benefits.
So I'm going to let Brandon build on that a little bit, because, you know, with risks, there's also challenges, right? So Let's stick in that yard space. So what do you think the biggest challenges are that the terminals and yards face in today's volatile environment?
First and foremost, costs. They're overwhelmed by, you know, the thought to change everything to electric, outfit the assets, update them, as well as no one operation is the same. So the solve that we're working towards today may not be relevant for another operation. So really taking a step back and looking at the flow and from the start to finish on what you can impact with those challenges.
And so how can terminals integrate sustainability practices without compromising safety, efficiency, and profitability?
Multiple ways. And when you think of sustainability, again, it's just this overbearing word or, you know, task, if you will. But one of the things, if you take a step back, you could look at from simple things, from water bottles to making sure that, you know, they're more sustainable for the environment, all the way down to, you know, another simple thing would be recycle cans at ConGlobal's operations to our fleet, electrifying them or transitioning to EV units. And then also lights, you know, something as simple as, you know, we had the opportunity to work with Alan in Stockton, and you know, transitioning your timers where you're not in a room or an area to go off or dim has an impact. And if you do those small things consistently, they lead to a drastic change over time.
All right. So Siemens, I'm going to take it back to you because you are known for your innovative technologies. So Alan or Roland, I'll let you decide who wants to answer me. But how can terminals leverage technology to improve operations and sustainability?
Well, one of the things they can do, and one of the things we're trying to do within our team is, you know, as we develop technology, you know, what also emerges is new business models. And so as we think about what we're doing, it's not only that infrastructure and the capital assets that are there deployed, but it's also being able to take that data and, you know, work on new software and then really work on new services. You know, for example, one of the things we've talked about with our partners at Con Global and with BNSF is being able to engage with them on a managed service so that as part of reducing risk, we can take that data, leverage our software platform, and then be able to provide a managed service so that the people there in the rail yard can focus on what they do best, which is operating the rail yard and operating the trucks that go back and forth between the rail and the trucks that are delivering these goods. And then for us, it's being able to say, we'll take on that risk. We'll take on the risk of ensuring that, you know, the electrification of your fleet doesn't cause you a lot of angst. You know, we'll be able to identify problems before they occur. You know, one of the things we heard in Stockton is that, you know, if a charger goes down, then they call somebody, and then that person may come over in 2 hours. They may be able to solve it remotely, but it may take them 2 days. Well, you know something? Con Globe or BNSF doesn't have 2 days. You know, it really takes a hit on productivity. So one of the things that we try to do is say, we'll be able to identify the problem ideally before it occurs, and we'll be able to report on for you to say, here's how much time and money and energy we've saved you as a result of this proactive managed service. So I think that that's how technology can really help to create better business models for our customers.
Yeah, you've hit it on the head. I just wanted to say, I mean, that is absolutely critical. We can't fail for BNSF, and BNSF can't fail for their customers. So as we're adopting these new technologies and bringing sustainability in the operations, we've got to continue to operate as we always have. And so, you know, we appreciate Siemens being able to do that and help us manage our risk. Sorry, Roland, you know, go ahead.
No, I think it's awesome, please. And the other thing I can add to it is, again, as a full service provider, as the fact that we deal with a lot of different verticals, sometimes there's cross vertical ideas that you wouldn't necessarily think of. And so because we're working with so many different industries, we may be able to bring something over the course of the relationship that's working. And one of the, you know, one of the impediments to getting started that's already been spoken about is fear, right? How much is it going to cost? Is it going to work, et cetera? So again, Siemens is we're a client of ourselves. Our team actually helps with our sustainability journey. And so we're working on things to improve our sustainability, and we can bring that to our customers. And then as we have success with clients, we can bring those successes to other clients and ports, et cetera. So there's bleeding edge technology, and there's cutting edge technology. And again, there's different risk, as Alan already said, that people are willing to take. And so we want to bring those proven solutions, right? And have that analysis done so we can bring those opportunities to customers. So from a jumping off point and from an engagement point, those from a technology standpoint, those things are very important to be able to have experience and have performance to be able to demonstrate that as we bring it to the table.
All right, so Ashley, I've let you be quiet for too long. But now I'm going to give you what's probably arguably one of the most important topics. So how important are collaborations and partnerships that, and how have they significantly improved terminal operations or sustainability efforts?
I would say that collaborations and partnerships are hugely important. We rely on our service partners like Con Global in many locations, and Con Global and other service partners' willingness to participate in and often execute new processes is critical to improved operations. And often it yields significant sustainability benefits as well. Additionally, successful relationships not only with service providers such as yourselves, but OEMs and government agencies are crucial in securing grant funding for advanced technology projects, and that further helps push sustainability efforts.
Definitely. So I guess as a quick follow-up to the group, I don't know, Paige, if you want to go next and share an example of a successful partnership that has significantly improved terminal operations or sustainability efforts.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, even with BNSF, we were able to 100% electrify our yard in Stockton. As Alan mentioned, we visited it and just kind of, you know, scoped out how everything's going. And that project specifically was able to happen due to the funding that Ashley mentioned. We actually received, both BNSF and Con Global received funding for the infrastructure piece and the equipment piece. And that really allowed us to be able to completely go 100% electric there. And that funding was given to us by the MSRC, the South Coast Air Quality Management District over in California.
How about you, Brandon? You've got some examples you want to share of collaboration?
Yeah, I think I will actually add on to Paige. So as of today, we actually received our first shipment of EV pickup trucks to start using in our operations, which is a further testament to joint efforts and, you know, reaching the sustainability. So it's very rewarding. One of the other things of a successful partnership, we look at like idling. Idling is a big downside to our operations. And being in the transportation industry, we have the largest footprint in the impact, but it also is the most efficient way to transport goods, people, and services. So some of the efforts that we are taking here at Con Global is all of our equipment has the opportunity to auto shut off after a duration of time. So if the human factor may not have the opportunity to shut off the equipment, that will give us a fail safe there. The other thing is we're trying to equip our frontline leaders. Alan mentioned it, with the right data. And so using real-time information from our telematics to alert where an operation, where in the operation there may be idling equipment that may not be efficient to adjust appropriately. You know, obviously the environment, the operational footprint will have an impact on that, but giving our frontline leaders that tool set definitely makes them already available to adjust to get to our goal.
And I'll just add on also from a collaboration standpoint, we're collaborating with folks on our gate products as well. So we've actually installed a gate at some warehouses where we're able to help with wear compliance. We've also reduced idling time at gates by being able to reduce time at sitting outside of a gate waiting to get in by taking it down from a couple of minutes to literally being able to roll through in a matter of seconds. So we've been able to help on that side as well. And then also with Verispot, you no longer have to, you know, drive around a truck with, you know, for 4 or 6 or 8 hours taking inventory in a facility because it's happening automatically, as again, in the normal course of business. So you're not adding an additional asset that's out there again with emissions.
Right. So and you're not replacing people with technology. There's still a need for people. And it's also just crazy to think about that. We're talking about a goal in 2050. But we're boiling it down to minutes. Minutes in an operation impact over a year, over 2, 5, 7, which is outstanding to think about. And also with the gate operations and looking at a terminal from a full point of view from point A to point B is you have an impact or can make a change from the moment they step on property or drive on property to the moment they depart the facility. And those over operations in a large area, metropolitan area, have an impact to the whole, to the neighborhoods that we operate in.
Well, and you also triggered another thought, which is we're reducing driver dwell in facilities as well, which also, again, is reducing the time that they're, you know, producing emissions within the facilities, so much more efficient as well. All right, so pitching the same question to, let's start with Alan, but do you have additional collaborations that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, well, we're actually launching our initiative publicly this week. It's called Depot 360. And as part of that, we're going to be you know, launching that with a couple of different partners, including telematics partners like Geotab, finance partners. We have a couple of customers we'll be announcing as well. And so I think at the outset, I think you said it best, no one can do it alone. As big as Siemens is, you know, we absolutely need to have the right set of partnerships in order to succeed. And those partnerships include some of the telematics. It includes financing. It includes, you know, capital asset infrastructure above and beyond just chargers, but, you know, all the needs, you know, within a facility. It also, you know, working with utilities and working with the energy space, you know, one of the things that, you know, we will do for Con Global and BNSF and our customers is making sure part of that data stream is getting the energy pricing signals so that we can really understand when to stop, start, and modulate power for the charging, make sure we can participate, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of distributed energy resources, whether it's in Stockton or any of these yards where there's a lot of electric vehicles. So being able to have those batteries and these vehicles participate in the grid and being able to generate revenues, which ultimately reduce energy spend even further, you know, those are partnerships which are important. And so whether it's on the utility level or on the wholesale level, I think those types of activities is that we'll do on behalf of Con Global and our customers to make sure that all these pieces come together on their behalf so that those operations are efficient. And, you know, we can, you know, reduce a lot of energy spend and waste that will occur that people just don't think about when they're running diesel, and they will be inherently having to think about as they're working on an electric fleet.
Well, I think two aspects. One is in terms of fuel alternatives out there right now. There are a lot of industries, a lot of companies out there that are making the investment in alternative fuels, whether that's, you know, biodiesel or clean hydrogen, et cetera, the list goes on. It's bringing those partnerships to bear for our clients and understanding, you know, is that something on site? Is that something in a pipeline aspect of it, and how we bring those solutions to the clients? And those are partnerships that we bring to bear. The other, and that's a macro, but it is something that's going to be very important to everyone achieving overall sustainability, because these are the companies of the future. They're going to be creating the fuels of the future as well. And so they're incredibly important, obviously, to port operations. The other part of this from a collaboration standpoint, partnership standpoint, is scope 3 emissions. And it's an interesting point here, because the scope 3 emissions are our vendors, our suppliers, and their scope 1 and their scope 2. And so from a partnership standpoint, you know, it's obviously in everyone's best interest if we can decarbonize. We reduce our scope 3 emissions. Con Global would reduce their scope 3 emissions by having their vendors be obviously more sustainable and decarbonize themselves. And so there are a lot of tools out there to be able to facilitate, get this kind of information out to the broader audience, to the vendors and the supply chain, and make sure that they're becoming more sustainable. And there are digital tools associated with that to be able to collect the data, provide them the information that they need so that they can create their own KPIs, et cetera. So it becomes a broader, more holistic approach. It's going to be required. Scope 3 is part of the process, and it's going to be required. And there are tools that are, you know, that are developed and being developed. And so that partnership is bringing those tools to bear. Again, they may be some third party, they may be some in-house, but also bringing the vendors and supply chain to the table too, so they can participate and know that they can succeed as well.
Okay, thank you. So Ashley, I'm going to kick it back to you. So we know that as we continue to electrify, it can burden scope 2 emissions. What strategies can companies use to combat the increase in scope 2 and remain on a steady path to net zero?
Yeah, so, you know, speaking from BNSF's perspective, one thing we're doing is considering renewable energy solutions like wind or solar in deregulated markets, where we do have the ability to choose our energy provider. So we specifically request renewable energy contracts when hosting RFPs for deregulated power, and we evaluate the premium and make case-by-case decisions, because again, it is, you know, people, planet, profit, have to consider all three legs of the stool, but certainly something worth considering in those deregulated markets.
All right, so Paige, I've heard the term carbon intelligence. Can you unpack it further? Our listeners?
Yeah, definitely. I actually was listening to Roland's response to one of the questions earlier, and I thought it sounded just like carbon intelligence. It's broadly a set of capabilities that enables organizations to control, improve, and drive value creation by really embedding sustainability into the core business and into the core decision making of a business as well. And I guess you can kind of break it down into 2 or 3 phases. The first phase is carbon compliance, or essentially the information gathering phase. So for us, that kind of has looked like just gathering data from our terminals to come up with a complete carbon footprint. and understand, you know, where are we at? What's our baseline? And I think that's really the first step in carbon intelligence is getting the information, and then you can move into phase two where it's kind of like carbon management. And I think this is where Siemens will come in to kind of provide their technology and work together to basically just give eyes to our carbon footprint. Because I think right now we have an idea and we could say, oh, this location emits more, but it goes beyond that. It's looking more into the data, figuring out insights and actionable items that you can take from that data to actually accelerate towards net zero. And so once you kind of have those two pieces together, that's when you can really marry it into the business and combine it with already existing data, our financial data, our operational data as another core piece of the business. So once you kind of do all of those things, that's when the business becomes carbon intelligent. So the phase three, or carbon intelligence itself, is just the output of the whole thing or the final product. Once a business is truly carbon intelligent, they've got sustainability fully integrated into their business. It's no longer a sustainability side project or, you know, just something that we're doing every year to check a box. The business itself has become sustainable.
Okay, thank you. So, Roland, why is carbon intelligence critical for a business to move at speed and scale?
Well, I think Paige already pointed out we stole our own thunder here, and Paige said, explaining what carbon intelligence is. So I think it is about data. And I do think it is about having the right data up front and having partners that can help you sort that out. Because there's a lot of information. The question is the information accurate, and is it accurate to what we want it to be, you know, to what we need it to be? And so that's, you know, the initialization of data and having the tools to capture it. Ashley mentioned procurement. You know, procurement exercises, utilities, that information is the starting point. And so where does our utility data, our fuel data come from? It comes from that procurement, those procurement exercises. So capturing that information on the front end and then cleaning it, making sure it's accurate for the sustainability and decarbonization pieces in it. What's the carbon content of the fuels, et cetera. And then, you know, Paige already explained it again. It's using that information and making the right decisions about what are the opportunities. And then making those core to the operations, the implementation facts of that. And then ultimately it ends again, and we've already stolen our thunder, and Paige has already said it, but it ends with having the KPIs, having the digitalization software, being able to look at what we're doing, say it is sustainable from the three aspects of it, financially, operationally, and environmentally, and then we can prove it and upgrade it on an ongoing basis, and it just becomes part of our operations. So it culminates with the data, making sure the data, again, that we captured is clean, making sure it's being reported accurately, and then looking at that for other opportunities. What are the new technologies? What are the more opportunities so we can be even more productive associated with all three aspects of this, the financial, the operational, and the sustainable? So that's the simple answer, but we've talked about it in a few different ways.
So for either of you, Alan or Roland, where do you think most companies are in their journey along that, you know, carbon intelligence path?
Well, you know, as two fellow Bostonians, you know, people from Boston know that revolutionaries get shot if we're not careful. And so, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is make sure that we are, you know, making it easy for people to, you know, take this risk. As a startup company, you know, within Siemens, you know, part of what we need to do is do a lot of missionary selling. And I would say when it comes to the fleet side, you know, we are in its infant stages. We're just early days. And that has to do with the fact that these vehicles are just coming out. You know, having that integration is not quite set. And it's really an educational process. And we have to make sure that we're conveying and quantifying the benefits of electrification every time we speak with customers. You know, we have, you know, fairly well advanced customers like Con Global, but even Con Global and BNSF, as much of the work that we're all doing, including Siemens, we know we're not there yet. And so it's really up to all of us to ensure that we are, you know, partnering not only, you know, together, but, you know, when it comes to silo breakdowns, a lot of that has to do with the data. And, you know, some of the artificial intelligence that we're incorporating into that data integration that I described earlier allows us to make much better decisions than we would trying to just kind of use the software on our own and then trying to, you know, ask different people different questions. What do you think? the AI actually allows you to kind of take some of those complex decisions away from us humans and make sure the data itself is making those decisions. And so that's the exciting bit. But I can't say that every one of our customers is quite there yet, but that's the opportunity. You know, we wouldn't be starting this company if we thought everyone was already there. And so that's what's exciting, you know, working with companies like BNSF, Con Global, all these different organizations where we hope to make a big difference.
I love that. And I loved the, silo breakdown, the data, being able to break down the silos. That's a great visual.
Yeah. And not one thing that we've kind of talked about today could be solved individually, I think is a big takeaway. When you're trying to achieve your scope 1, 2, and 3 is that it takes a collective group and a partnership. And then also just a basic understanding of where you are. So it's a group effort.
Absolutely. Okay. So this next question is for the group, and don't worry, I won't make you fight for who goes first. But I did want to let you know it's going to come at all of you, but why is it so important to accelerate industrial decarbonization of heavy industry, meaning steel, metals and mining, cement, chemicals, and freight and logistics? Let's go ahead and go with Ashley first.
Okay. So, I think the sector is certainly positioned to make significant progress on carbon reduction, rail specifically, and I think maybe Paige mentioned this at the beginning of the call. Rail is already the most environmentally friendly form of land transportation at, I believe, less than 2% of transportation greenhouse gases, which is just under 1/3 of total U.S. greenhouse gases. However, we're still doing our part with electric vehicle demos and renewable and biodiesel testing. The electrification of hostlers at our San Bernardino facility is actually just one of many locations that we've piloted electric hostlers. We mentioned Stockton earlier. And so we're you know, continuing to test those emission reduction technologies. In addition to hostlers, zero emission locomotives, cargo handling equipment, passenger vehicles all around our network.
Okay, thank you. How about you, Paige?
Yeah, I guess when I think about why is it important, ultimately rail and transportation, this industry is crucial to our well-being and how we live and interact and collaborate just kind of as like a global economy, a global society. And with that being something that's, you know, crucial or important or we can't do without, that piece of the environmental sustainability of knowing that the things that we can't do without are what's kind of causing climate change. And so I think putting that together, it's really important to tackle this issue and like you said, accelerate our paths to net zero so that we can continue to enjoy kind of commodities and these things that, you know, we produce in a way that doesn't harm the environment and other people and future generations and all that. So,
all right. Thank you. Brandon?
Paige kind of said it. I think it's because we have the largest impact and footprint, transportation industry as a whole. And also just accelerating it because it's still in its infancy stage, as Alan alluded to. And so accelerating and getting those partnerships early will help just achieve the goal in 2050 and, you know, hopefully far before that to enjoy the planet and the things, resources we have now.
Okay, Roland.
I think it's been said in some ways, but the focus in terms of the biggest participation, right? And so if it is the most difficult or the most challenging, then it's easy to say that it is that and it's not possible or we won't focus on that, we'll focus on the easy things. And I think in this particular case, it's been said, if we can find these solutions for these heavy industries, then they will be applicable to other applications as well. We'll have a more holistic solution to the challenge and the problem as it is, and that's where the most intense use and that's where the most intense production is. So let's solve those issues, and then we can clean up the easy stuff, because we're doing that anyways. We're doing, or at least we're focusing on those easy things as well. It's already been talked about in that conversation, right? Reducing the idling and things of that nature, great. Those are fantastic and those are huge contributors. But let's not leave the larger, more intense applications, the fossil fuel usage, the fact that we have to move large pieces of equipment, right? And that takes a lot of power, a lot of energy to be able to do that. Let's find those sustainable alternatives to that and make those happen. And that will have the most impact.
Okay, Alan.
I echo what others say, and I think when you think about heavy industry, conventionally people view that as heavy carbon, heavy pollution. And so, now we have the opportunity to tell people exactly what we're all doing to ameliorate that and to rectify that. And so, it's now up to us to tell the world what we're doing together to make that impact.
Yep, I agree. Get the message out there. Okay, so again, I have another one for everyone. So investment in innovation can potentially reduce decarbonization costs, but these investments aren't happening at scale or the pace of net zero requires. How can we break down the silos and work across the broader value chain? So I'll go in reverse order this time. Alan.
Yeah, well, I think there's a few different ways to think about, how to break those silos. First thing, if you think about some of the grants out there, as we work with our customers, we look to scour, what state or local or federal grants are out there that we can take advantage of to help with non-dilutive financing, for our collective efforts. So I think that's point number one. Point number two, as Con Global knows, we at Siemens, our Siemens Financial Services Group, with our structured finance group, we're working to invest and to provide financing solutions for our customers every day. And many other project finance companies are trying to do the same thing, so we can transition those capital expenses to operational expenses and to incorporate those into the services that we're providing. So I think that that's another piece. And I think the third piece that I've mentioned a couple times now is the energy spend. And, how do we ensure that we, work with all those different stakeholders to reduce the total per kilowatt hour spend on behalf of our customers. And I think that there are some ways to do that, ways to finance that, ways to participate, using these energy resources, these distributed resources that are now part of what, Con Global's yards and BNSF's yards. And, how do we ensure that we're, generating some financing opportunities around that?
I think it's cost to doing business and understanding what the implications are, as we said in the beginning. So it's creating the right budgets. Fear of implementation has been talked about regarding, well, what's it going to cost and how long is it going to take and is it going to have a beneficial impact? And I think that, I think most of us are motivated by that we want to improve the environment. And so we're finding these solutions and these opportunities. And Alan's already hit upon a lot of the, direct access financial opportunities in terms of incentives or financing and things of that nature. I think the other aspect is understanding what those budget implications are and the leadership being able to make those decisions, because there's going to cost implications one way or the other, whether it's regulatory, meeting SEC regulations, meeting local regulations for operations, etc. There are cost implications for doing business with that. And there are offsets to those, direct offsets to those, because, again, you can avoid fine fees, penalties, and actually find some incentives and improve your operations and therefore get operational performance by creating sustainability opportunities, right? And so you're mitigating those cost risks associated with that operation. Customers are going to expect it as well. And that's one thing in terms of being in business and staying in business. Our customers now and our investors expect that as well. So we need to meet those requirements. And the opportunity is to make that investment. The operational efficiencies and the cost avoidance will provide ROI associated with those initial costs. And we can demonstrate that. And I think a lot of companies now, and this is more, I'll close with this part of it, which is a lot of companies now are looking at longer term investments. When I started in the energy industry, it was always looking at 1, 3, 5 year paybacks at most relative to ROI for projects. And people are now understanding that some of these projects may have a longer ROI, but they have a sustainability component, which is a cost avoidance component, which adds to the return on them. And so companies like Siemens are looking at longer term investments in these, and that's becoming the norm. And that's exciting, because that means we're willing to make the investment.
Yeah, absolutely. As you talked about all the stakeholders and how important it is, another stakeholder that stood out to me that I don't think we've talked about yet too is employees. So employees are another one that really find sustainability practices important, right? And so people want to work for companies that, again, are going down the net zero path, that are doing, have more sustainable practices, that are doing the right thing. And then even when it comes to like the electrification that we've talked about, you know, we have drivers that absolutely love the EV hostlers. So they don't have to go home smelling like diesel at the end of the day. They're quieter. There's all kinds of things that, again, from an employee experience, it's been a net win. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, I decided I needed to weigh in here because I don't think we had talked about that at all yet. So, no.
And you think about the employees and coworkers, they're in their, the operations are in their communities. So their impact is not only at work and a the right tool for the job, but also the positive impact to the community.
Yeah. And I think, Ashley, were you going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say that that point in particular, the employees that are actually driving the electric vehicles, you know, enjoying them and benefiting from them can't be overstated. Change can often be challenging. You know, a lot of times when we try to implement new processes, we're met with headbutting, but across the board, employees are loving these vehicles and directly reaping benefits from them on a day-to-day basis. And then, I can answer your question as well, too.
Yes, please do. Let's stay on you.
Okay. So walking it back a little bit, some of the bigger hurdles that BNSF is facing specifically include technology availability and readiness, on top of some other things that we've already discussed, like cost and power availability. So from BNSF's perspective, we need battery technology to advance for off-road operations like cargo handling equipment and locomotives in addition to the passenger vehicles. So, you know, I think seeing a consolidation of investment in off-road technologies may also help in driving down costs of those technologies sooner in those spaces. But then additionally, and I think it was Alan that mentioned this first, grant funding can be extremely impactful in jumpstarting innovation as well. So not only, you know, can we get grant funding, but can it have shorter operational requirements that match warranty lengths of the equipment that we're purchasing? Or can we see greater funding incentives when, you know, the cost of technology is sometimes 2x what the diesel counterpart is? Grant funding with fewer geographic constraints would be helpful for BNSF, where we have locomotives that are, you know, not only operating necessarily in air districts or in one state. And so I think that, you know, grant funding that's tweaked for the industry can also help us see greater investments in zero emission technologies too.
Yeah, it can make what might otherwise be very difficult for some companies achievable, quite candidly.
Yeah, and the majority of funding to today, or at least for most people, is that it's based on public infrastructure, and I think we need to start, you know, making sure that we're, you know, working, you know, with the governments to ensure they realize that for private industry, it's just as important to get that funding as it is just for public locations.
Right. I think when I think about breaking down silos, it's support and collaboration, but also communicating effectively and continuously of the opportunities out there. You know, as Ashley just pointed out, the battery life in an operation, if you look at a battery life in an operation in a rail terminal, may not be sufficient in maritime or in the trucking industry. So collaborating and supporting each other to get that solved definitely will help jumpstart and break down those silos.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I think just to piggyback on that, I was going to mention collaboration as one of the key pieces here into breaking down those silos. And one thing that I've experienced from the government, Illinois EPA actually set up a call to interact with industries like ConGlobal, BNSF, and get their feedback on what has been working and what hasn't been working, what should we stay away from, as they're trying to kind of roll out their own funding similar to California. So I think it takes governments like that to, or the, you know, EPA, it takes those agencies to be interested and to be invested and to want to hear from us and then actually take that feedback and integrate it in ways that do benefit us. So I think just back on that collaboration piece is going to be huge in order to accelerate those.
I think it's the biggest thing. I really do. Okay, so I only have one more prepared question, and it's the one that I ask at the end of every podcast. But before that, I'm going to give you guys the opportunity. Is there anything that I didn't ask any of you that you hoped that I would?
Well, I would just like to take a moment to highlight, a partnership that's top of mind for me, which is BNSF and Kong Global's partnership in California, where we've received grant funding from the Mobile Source Review Committee to deploy 12 electric yard trucks at our San Bernardino facility. So electric yard trucks obviously have a very positive environmental impact on the surrounding communities, which we've kind of already discussed. But, you know, this project directly improves air quality in an area that has a complex mix of, you know, air pollution sources. And the grant funding from MSRC made this project possible by helping to offset the cost of the trucks and charging and infrastructure. So wanted to point out that successful project, and really happy to be in partnership with Kong Global on it.
Yes, that's been an extremely successful project. We've been grateful to be partnered with BNSF on that project. And yes, we owe it all to MSRC and our great partners in the project along with BNSF. So I don't know if you have anything else to add.
No, yeah, I think Ashley did a great job covering it. Obviously, we're really excited. I think those trucks go into commission this month. So, yeah, we'll get to see them moving right now.
Okay, so here comes the last question, which is, what does a future-focused terminal mean to you? I'm going to go ahead and Roland, you can start.
Well, I'm sure my peers here have covered it well on that. I think that if I was going to touch upon what we talked about earlier without being coy, it's carbon intelligence. It's operating where sustainability and net zero are part of the operation from leadership down to the employee level. And everybody starts to see the benefit and sees it as a normal way of operating. And then we have sustainability. So that's what it looks like to me.
Brandon.
So a future-focused terminal looks to me as a safe, efficient operation, as Roland just mentioned, that everything is working collectively together to solve the overall problem or concern that we need to amend. So I think it's a safe and efficient operation.
Okay. Alan.
Yeah, Brendan hit on the head. It's really, you know, what are the problems you're trying to solve on behalf of your customers? And, you know, what we can't do is say, oh, AI is great. You need to use AI. Well, why? Well, I don't know. You know, you need to be able to, you know, make sure that all this technology and all the ways that we want to, you know, decarbonate, not only is doing so for the environment, all the key stakeholders, but at the end of the day, it's really how you're helping out Kong Global's and BNSF's customers. Sorry, Ashley. those four letters get confusing, but anyway, I think that's really it. So there'll be continued iterations to make sure that future looks brighter for all stakeholders.
Ashley.
Yeah, so from my perspective, sitting in a role in BNSF's environment and sustainability department, a future focused terminal to me is a sustainable terminal that seeks increased efficiencies with a decreased emissions footprint. You know, not to overuse the word efficiencies, but I think that's something that we all agree on is, you know, what a future-focused terminal looks like. And facilities that we've discussed in this discussion today come to mind, right? Stockton, San Bernardino, those practices are future forward and future looking, and they help to accomplish the goal of increased efficiencies with decreased emissions.
And yeah. Paige, bring us home.
And finally, I echo what everyone said. I do, but I also was going to mention the carbon intelligence piece. I think a future-focused terminal is carbon intelligent. You know, they've successfully integrated sustainability into their daily operations, and are focused on continuing that movement and continuous improvement moving forward.
All right, thank you. I want to thank all of you, all the experts here today that joined me to talk about this important topic of reaching net zero and decarbonization. So have a great rest of your day. Thank you for listening to the Future Focus Terminal Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. I hope you'll tap the follow button in your favorite podcast app so you'll never miss an episode. Thanks again, and until next time, take care.